It's the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. And our next guest has been working with our Native American tribes around the Great Lakes. You know, it's as though our Native tribes have always been fishing on our Great Lakes. It is part of the tradition, their tradition, and it is something that has sustained their communities. But more recently than not, those fresh fish have been found to contain contaminants like heavy metals, PCBs, and PFAS. So how can Native tribes around the Great Lakes find food that is safe and keep their traditions alive? That is why we speak to our next guest, Matt Dillinger, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the Medical College of Wisconsin and co-investigator at the Great Lakes Native American Research Center for Health. He's telling us about an app that determines whether the fish that are caught in the Great Lakes are safe to eat. And you can join our conversation at any time by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@wpr.org. Hey, Matt, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your work with our Native American tribes around the Great Lakes, how long it's gone back, and what your work is focused on.
Well, my background is in human health risk assessment and ecological risk assessment. And as a graduate student, going back over a decade now, I started working with the tribes on some fish consumption advice projects. And I got involved in some federally funded programs as a graduate student to help them. And I was at the time learning how to do basic human health risk assessment. And as a graduate student, I got a lot of experience doing that. And that's how I got introduced to them. And the reason they're interested in the fish consumption issue is, as you mentioned, it's a very important, culturally important food for them. And it's also commercially important.
So in your work, where did this start? What did you first find when it came to the fish that our Native tribes were catching around the Great Lakes?
Yep. So the concern was that using human health risk assessment techniques, the EPA and some other government agencies had identified a potential excessive risk from chemical contaminants like mercury and polychlorinated biphenyls, particularly in the Great Lakes area. And that risk could be elevated for tribes who eat fish more frequently potentially than the general population. And so they started, many of the tribes in the region have their own fisheries assessment programs. And the one I was partnering with is out of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan in the UP. And they started monitoring the fish species that they eat the most. And so in the case of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe and the tribes in the UP of Michigan, they eat a lot of whitefish and lake trout. And so we have 30 years of data on these chemical contaminants in whitefish and lake trout. But with all that data, you need to figure out what to do with it and how to get that information to the public, be they tribal or anyone, mm-hmm. to help build some advice for them. And so we were building brochures and simple infographics, trying to explain the complexities of the risks and benefits of eating fish, because fish are generally a beneficial, nutritious food to eat. And we were trying to condense a lot of data and science that goes behind the calculations into some simplified messaging. That's how it started. It started as kind of pamphlets.
So it started as pamphlets, but it has now evolved into technology, and there is an app that now incorporates this data, as I understand it, Matt. And tell us a little bit about this app and how it works, and whether, and you've studied this now, you wrote a 2023 paper about contaminant concentrations in Great Lakes fish. How is this app responding to it?
So about 10 years ago, I wrote a grant to the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences to take the fish consumption advice that we were working on and build it into an app, a mobile app. And really the idea there was to take all those calculations and those algorithms that estimate the extent to which someone might be approaching or exceeding a government recommended level of intake for mercury PCBs, I was able to automate that into mobile software, which is also on the web, and bring a more nuanced set of advice for multiple species for people. And we wanted to see how they would react to that. So that was the original study. And that was rolled into two different studies over the past 8 years or so. And we did use the data that you're referring to in the 2023 publication. We used about 30 years of data to make sure that we were on track with what the overall trends and contaminants were, because those can change over time. So after we pilot tested the app using some basic data, we then updated it using more comprehensive data from our tribal partners who are sampling the fish that their tribal fishermen have brought in from the lakes themselves. And we also supplemented that with state of Michigan data, and we created a more comprehensive app. And that allows people to interact with it, put their weight in, select meal sizes, and then it gives them a long list of potential fish that they might eat, and it tells them how many they can eat per week or per month or something like that based on their weight and their personal risk profile. And so we found that was very well received, and we've been testing it, like I said, over the past decade to see how people respond to it as we update it. And so far it's been a hit.
Yeah. And so when you analyze the results of this app that incorporates the research and data of contaminants from these fish, what do you see as the outcome and result? And would this be an opportunity for us to employ this app as well?
Yeah, I think that I mentioned pamphlets and infographics at the top, because before it was common to use software like this, that's what we had to work with to try to simplify the messaging. But right. Because we can instantly do these calculations in the back end of your phone or a web browser, we can give a little bit more nuanced advice, more tailored advice, and it's more powerful and more useful and overcomes some of the limitations of the amount of assumptions you might make for just giving some rule of thumb recommendations on eating how much walleye a pregnant woman could eat, for example. The app eliminates some of those assumptions. And of course, now that we're in 2025, pretty much everyone has a phone in their pocket. Right. And I think there's a potential for everyone to be engaging with environmental data this way. What we found was that for the most part, we ran a clinical trial, a randomized controlled trial, not clinical trial, controlled trial on a few hundred Anishinaabe Native American participants, adults. And we asked them for a month pre and a month post using the software, how much fish they ate. And then we were able to use the same calculations that we built the app off of to assess whether or not they were exceeding government recommendations, which is, by the way, a little slightly different than predicting someone's risk of a health outcome. This is whether or not they were approaching or exceeding the government recommendations on intake for certain chemicals, mostly mercury and polychlorinated biphenyls. And what we found was that really only the maximum intake scenarios across the board where people were eating the most fish that they reported to us were exceeding the levels. Up to the 75th percentile of both controls and people who used the software stayed within the government recommendations. And we did find that people who had the app used it, liked it, and reported that they would consume more fish and select healthier fish as a response of having it. And they did all of this while eating a relatively elevated amount of fish and staying within the government guidelines. So as I mentioned earlier, EPA and others were worried these tribes might be exceeding the government guidelines, maybe elevating their risk from certain contaminants. And while it's a legitimate concern, what we're finding with our data is that for the most part, people were eating a fair amount of fish, maybe not as much as they would like to, but they're staying within those recommendations. So that should alleviate some of the fears, particularly when they're using our software. And then we did a follow-up, a 2- and 3-year follow-up on the software. And we asked people if they were using it, if they would use it regularly, if they would eat more fish, if they could use it, if they feel more confident about serving fish to their family. And our numbers went from during the trial from things like 50 to 69%, all the way up to 95, 97%. So significantly improved responses to the software when we gave them, as we were updating the software and as we had a campaign promoting it over the past few years. So all very positive results demonstrating the potential of using this technology.
It is having a beneficial impact. Matt Dellinger, our guest, Associate Professor of Epidemiology in the Institute for Health and Humanity at the Medical College of Wisconsin, co-investigator at the Great Lakes Native American Research Center for Health, coordinating biomedical research initiatives in the Bemidji, Minnesota area, taking a look at how our Native American traditions are being helped and the safety of our Native communities are being supported by new technology, specifically this app, which is combining 30 plus years of data now about contaminants in Great Lakes fish and how that can be employed to minimize health risks. So, Matt, could anybody use this app? And if so, where do they find it?
It is on the Google Play Store and the Apple Store, and it's also on a website that anyone could get access to. And I'd be happy to provide that link to your producers.
Yep.
Anyone can use it, but you should be aware that the data that we are using, even the data that we requested from the state, is limited to the 1836 treaty areas. So 1836 treaty areas, it's a specific boundary in northern Michigan that covers a certain amount of tribes that have, that in 1836, they signed a series of treaties with the federal government dictating that they could, if they went by ceding their territory and going to the reservations to join the reservation system, one of the conditions with it was that they could continue to hunt, fish, and gather within that broader area. So that's, you know, that covers Huron, Superior, and Lake Michigan areas. And so that's a specific geographic region. It's a fairly large one, but it tends to be less, the fish in those areas tend to be a little less contaminated than the ones in, for example, southern Lake Michigan, which is something that we mentioned in our 2023 publication. So those caveats are important. And this is what the app is built around. And one of the motivations for doing that was to make sure that we were giving them the data that was most relevant to them and not unduly frightening people with data that could be not as relevant. So for anyone who's living outside of that northern Michigan area, the software is still helpful to give you a sense of which fish are going to be relatively less contaminated than others, because that tends to hold up across species. So if you were to go in and download it and enter your data, enter your body weight, your intended meal size, and whether or not you're a woman who's going to get pregnant, because the most sensitive human to these contaminants is the developing fetus, you'll get a good sense of how many meals per week or month you might eat for certain fish. And in general, you'll find things like walleye are a little higher in mercury. Lake trout can be a little higher in PCBs, although that's decreasing per our 2023 publication. And it'll give you a general idea of where those contaminants fall out. And that should, that would hold true outside the territory, but you really need to be aware that we've built this on data that is on relatively less contaminated fish than you might find in our more southern areas of the Great Lakes.
Does mercury and PCBs, as you mentioned, and other contaminants accumulate in some fish more than others? Are there types of fish where you see more of these things?
Yeah, the species matters, and that's because these contaminants bioaccumulate in the food chain. So if it's a smaller fish, like a perch or a bluegill, they don't accumulate as much mercury and PCB because they're lower on the food chain. And so the mercury is a good example. It's a ubiquitous contaminant. Mercury is a part of the environment, but it can be mobilized into biotic media via methylation of the mercury, so you get methyl mercury, it's organic mercury, and then it starts to accumulate in like phytoplankton and then and other plankton, and then those get eaten by the next thing up the food chain, be they fish or maybe crustaceans or something like that. And then as the each time an organism goes around vacuuming up, eating up all these other organisms that are maybe slightly contaminated, they accumulate that contamination because it doesn't leave their body at a very high rate. So it enters their body at a faster rate, and they accumulate at a faster rate, then they eliminate it. And so then you get up to the higher trophic levels, the higher up the food chain, you get to a fish like a walleye that eats a lot of other fish that maybe have been eating other fish that have been eating other fish. And those fish were eating invertebrates, if you get the idea. So the walleye, which is a very delicious fish, is kind of high, it's very high in the food chain within the aquatic ecosystem. And so they, and because they're very muscular fish and not as fatty, they tend to accumulate mercury in their muscles. So walleye and pike are one of the classic examples of something that tends to be a little higher in mercury. Lake trout tend to be a little higher in organochlorines like polychlorinated biphenyls, because those are lipophilic contaminants, and similar to the mercury, they accumulate, but they tend to store in the fat, like a fatty fish, like a salmon or a trout.
Matt Dellinger, we talked last hour to the DNR fisheries, and PFAS came up, the forever chemicals that we're just finding pretty much everywhere and in everybody. Is that something that you intend to study down the road, or is that have you looked at that as an epidemiologist yet?
Yeah, I've looked at it. That's a good example of what I was alluding to earlier. There was a study that came out in 2003, around the same time the My Contaminant Trend paper came out. And they used data from all around the Great Lakes, and they found alarmingly high levels of perfluorinated compounds in fish, which could potentially be triggering. They could exceed some of the aforementioned government levels, but those government benchmarks are also kind of a matter of discussion right now. So there's a lot of caveats to this. And I do mention it in my 2023 paper. We did do some pilot studying. Some pilot testing of our lake trout and our whitefish from the tribal fisheries for PFAS. And we found those numbers, I believe, because I'm going from memory here. Mm-hmm. I believe they were about half of what the other paper had found. So again, it can depend on where. The EPA is doing some really important work on the testing methods of PFAS, especially in fish, to make sure that we're not maybe biasing some of those results. That's a little outside my expertise, but I've read some interesting briefs on it. So people should really stay tuned to that. PFAS are not the sole... In humans, mercury comes exclusively, and PCBs as well, those almost come exclusively from eating fish. That's not the case with PFAS and some of the other forever type of chemicals, the very persistent organic pollutants. You can get PFAS from all kinds of sources.
Right.
And I'm working on some research right now, yes, to try to get a sense of where these things are coming from and how much of that contribution is from fish and how worried we should be. My personal thoughts on that is that we should be careful not to scare people before we're sure.
The science is still out and the research is still ongoing. Matt Dellinger, where does your research go from here? What are you looking to explore next and get answers to?
So the technology, of course, has accelerated in recent years.
Yeah.
We're beyond now just simple apps using little algorithms that I basically, the original algorithms that we built, I gave my programmer at Shorewood Tech some basic equations that I built, and it's relatively simple math to do that the software can handle easily. Now we're dealing with artificial intelligence and language learning model type algorithms yeah. that are becoming commonplace in both app programming and using them in the software themselves. So that's a growing area that my group and I are trying to wrap our heads around as quickly as we can.
Yeah.
We want to expand the use of mobile and other technology in not just the tribes, other rural groups, everybody in the Great Lakes region, everybody in the world, perhaps. We want to see this environmental data at people's fingertips in a usable and understandable way. And we do not intend to limit ourselves just to fish.
Yeah.
I'm primarily interested in the food chain, but there's other exposure science to be done. And so that's kind of where we're looking right now. We're, you know, it's difficult to apply for grants right now, but that's more or less, that's what we're doing.
Well, I find that fascinating, epidemiology at the age of artificial intelligence and how some of these large data sets and large language models may change the way epidemiology is done from the very, at its very core, and how that could be applied to the research that you've done so far with our Great Lakes fish and our Native American tribes who fish on those lakes, and what that could mean for food safety going forward, whether it be our fish, our game, or even perhaps our grocery store.
Yeah, we need another half hour or something.
Exactly. But and to go back to where we started here and just get some of the what our Native tribes have said about incorporating new technology into their ancient traditions and how those two work together as you see it in your work, Matt.
You know, those traditions, the beautiful thing about those traditions is that they're almost like a living thing. They are dynamic and they evolve, and yet they're stable, and they convey wisdom that we humans have used traditional knowledge and culture as a vehicle for information over the generations, dating back long before we had software or even writing, anything to put down and record. And I think it's really exciting to try to use the rapidly developing technological space as a place to play around with promoting very, very well-established, well-respected and important old ideas and concepts. And so I view culture in my work as the same way I view the ecosystem as an ecologist with an ecological background. And I do have a degree in ecology. And those are dynamic systems that evolve over time. And they're responsive to feedback. And so tribal language and tribal culture is tremendously important to the people that we're working with. And it's that provides important context for us to be able to convey nuance when we're trying to convey a difficult scientific concept to people. It's crucial that we integrate with the culture that has been developed over time and adapted to the Great Lakes region in this case to help people make decisions about their health, not just in an age of technology.
Matt, thank you so much for sharing your work with us today, and we will have to keep up with you and find out what's next and speak with you again. Thank you.
No problem. My pleasure.
Matt Dellinger, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the Medical College of Wisconsin, co-investigator at the Great Lakes Native American Research Center for Health. And details about that app that we talked about are available on the Larry Mueller Web Show page at WPR.org/Larry. Don't forget that Larry is live from Bayfield in Bloom on Friday. You can listen from 11 to 1. And last checked, if you are in Bayfield, there are still some tickets left. You can find those at online at WPR.org/Larry. Oh, and if not there, be sure to listen in to Garden Talk live from Bayfield and Bloom with Larry Mueller on Friday from 11 to 1 right here on WPR News.